Okay, good morning. We continue going through the Sefer Niflos, Mitaras Hashem Yisparach. And yesterday we discussed why the Canaanite nations would not follow up and try to make peace with the Jews. And basically they saw all the headaches that the Givonim had from the Jews even after trying to make a covenant. They figured it's not worth it to make a covenant. And, you know, we said, like, why wouldn't they like to live like servants? So we had a spirited discussion on this yesterday. And again, we need to understand now the next thing, and that's where we're in the middle. We're in page 118, the lower right-hand side. We need to further discuss exactly why the Givonim did not go straight forward with a regular peace treaty. And why did they come up with this trickery and everything? So let's start again from that paragraph. V'hateret sayoser nachon. We didn't get too far into it. V'hateret sayoser nachon nearly, and the better answer appears to me, ki b'krisis bris shel azayin amim hayutzarech liyos kama tenoim. In order to make a covenant with the seven nations, there would have to be many conditions. Three, to be specific. Number one, shikablo lehem hazayin mitzvos kama shiksavti lel. Number one, they'd have to keep the seven Noahide laws, as we already mentioned. Bei, shiyuhu lavodim ulamas tachas yad Yisrael. They'd be for servants and to be taxed under the hand of the Jewish people. Gimel, shiyisrafu psile elohehem v'kesev v'zov shalehem. They'd have to burn their idols, their images of gold and silver that they have. Three things. Now, that they were probably not prepared to do. They did not want to give up their lifestyle. They did not want to give up anything. All they wanted was to have peace. Right? That's what they were looking for, an equal-termed peace. Therefore, givonim to trickery. Kimiza ha'ish shiyirtzo lekabel of chukim chadoshim mikarov asher lo sharum avaseihem. Who is the person who wants to accept upon himself new laws, which, you know, they didn't have from their parents' generations? Vagam lisrof harbe kesef isov smallest yikarashim abesam, and to burn lots of items of gold and silver and certain clothing, you know, they have to get rid of their garments of idolatry, etc., etc. Kibavade kesev azov harbe hikdish lehem. They probably designated a lot of gold and silver for their idol worship, so they certainly wouldn't want to give up on that. Vata yiyu muchrachim lisrof la'abed yigiyas sam harbe. And now they'd be forced to burn and destroy that which they worked so hard of making for generations. So the truth is, they were not interested in being civilized. They were not interested in being civilized. Therefore, they wanted Yeshua to make a covenant with them in a way as if they were a distant land, who are not from the seven countries, nations. They would have a status of other nation status, increases brison when they make the covenant. Shadin lahem shiulamas Yisrael v'sulal, that the law is just they be taxed and that's it. Taxation they could live with. Veinu muchrachim lekabel aleihem azayin mitzvos lishrof sileihem, and they wouldn't be obliged to keep the seven Noahide laws and to burn all their idols. That was their plan. V'cheshvav givonim kachareish yachrisim moim bris boifin bris yeser amim. And the Givonim figured once they make the covenant with the Jews, like a foreign nation, so then Oslo Yuchlu B'nai Yisrael, Lishnois Shuv Mizet, then the Jews would not be able to change the terms of the agreement. V'yisharu v'chukeyem akodmim, they could live with their old statutes. V'litztarech l'isro psilem v'kesfem v'zahem, and they wouldn't have to burn any of their idols. And he says in brackets, could be that's how it turned out. We don't know. The Navi wasn't so specific about all the other things. All we know from the Navi is what, at the end of the day, they said, we'll let you live. And they said that you will be wood choppers and water carriers. And obviously they were willing to pay taxes because that was part of the deal already. So we don't know if they ever had to get rid of their idols. It's not clear. So now he's saying now, I think that that which Yeshua said to them when the discussion came, perhaps you live from amongst us, and how can we make a covenant with you? And what did they answer? Finally, Yeshua, and they answered Yeshua, Avodecha anachnu, etc. They said, we're your servants. Asher koshimot maaseh tshuvasim al shel Yeshua, ulai bekirbi. What kind of an answer is that to Yeshua? That they said, perhaps you're living close. And the answer, you know, we are your servants. Right? Again, where is that? They said, Avodecha. That's it. Avodecha anachnu. Right, so what kind of answer is that? So, I lost the place. 1 second. Nir ledaiti, it appears to me, ha kavona kach, this is what they meant. Ulai bekir biyata Yosef, maybe you live amongst our midst. Ubeez ofen echris l'chabris, how, in what way could we make a covenant with you? Kipen tzorech lios abris bofen sha'ata Yosef bekir bi. Maybe we'd have to make a covenant in a way that you live amongst us, and that is different terms. And he says, how can I make a bris? In other words, what he's asking is, in what way can I make a bris with you if you live amongst us? Right? In other words, Yeshua knows there's a big difference between a covenant between people who live in the land and those who don't. And they made themselves, the Givonim, as if they don't know any difference. They said, listen, we're your servants. What's the difference? We are subjugating ourselves to be your servants. Ulamasim, for tax. What does it matter how we make the covenant? What more is there to do than to become servants? They're playing like the fools. Right? When we go to my sichom lefi tumam, and since they're like talking so naturally, it's like they're talking like, well, listen, we came here to be your slaves. So it's pretty good. So therefore, nafal safek b'lev Yeshua. So a doubt fell in Yeshua's heart. Ki pen heim ba'atzmom yomru ki heim me'azayin amim. Because lest they are actually saying they're from the seven nations. And if they're from the seven nations, so how could they lie about something that's so obvious to be found out? And maybe when they said we're from far away, what do they really mean? They might be far away from Yeshua. Next time, but maybe they're still from the seven nations. Because the seven nations look very far away. So he still wasn't sure. So Yeshua continues, says, "Mi atem? Who are you? Umei ayin tovom? Where did you come from? Klomer, pirshu divrechem heitev man atem. Explain clearly where you're from." V'yom love, they said, "Me eres rechoka ma'od ba'avadecha. We're really far away." Umekodem la'amer rechoka ma'od. They didn't say the first time we're very far. They just said far, and I saying very far. V'ata amer rechoka ma'od. Now they're saying we're very far. You don't have to worry if we're from the seven nations. Because we're from really far away. And then explain. We heard all the things. They mentioned all the things, but as we've said, they didn't mention what happened to Yerich and I. So that it would seem that they really were so far away. They didn't hear of the recent current events. But also, and they were successful in what they did. There was a place to believe them, as I explained. And therefore they made a covenant without any other conditions. So after all is said and done, Yeshua still did a foolish thing. Right? After all is said and done, he still did a foolish thing. Right? Because after all the explanations, he still should have said, okay, tell me, what is the name of your country? And he should have asked Urim V'Tumim. So, you know, what becomes obvious through all of this is as the tzaddik is formulating this piece over here, but what he is saying is, you know, and that's exactly the way Hashem wanted it. That's exactly the way Hashem wanted it, that Yeshua would make a mistake. You see. Because, as you see, you know, had he not made the mistake, then what would have happened? They would have not made the agreement. They would have not made the agreement. So you're saying, so what would be so bad about that? Well, you'll see in the next paragraph what's going to be the problem. You're going to see how this agreement, remember, God has his plan. You got to always remember, the plan is what? The Jews walk into a land that's fully ready to be lived in, which could not normally happen under the normal course of events of conquering a country for all the reasons we've discussed. And therefore, you know, God causes again, we can't mix these things up. Everyone has free will choice, and don't think for a minute there's no free will choice going on over here. There's certainly free will choice, but there is an aspect of siyata deshmaya, of divine assistance, and divine assistance can help you stay sharp or not stay sharp, right? You know, a lot of times, whatever the situation is, you're in a certain situation, and you know, either God plunks the idea in your brain, or he doesn't plunk the idea in your brain. That's all there is to it. At the end of the day, like you're saying, oh, why didn't I remember that? Why didn't I think of that? The answer is because God didn't help you. Because God didn't help you. So we could certainly appreciate, if you put yourself in Yeshua's shoes for a moment. How did the parak start? The parak started, all the 31 kings are aligning themselves up to attack Yeshua. So you'd figure he has a bit on his mind, wouldn't you think? I mean, he has a bit on his mind. How's he going to deal with the 31 nations? Hashem hasn't told him anything yet. So he can't just sit around and wait for the Dvar Hashem. You just never know. He has to start thinking, okay, 31, we're probably outnumbered, who knows how much to one. So he's got a lot on his plate. This is not like a simple thing. This is his whole destiny is based on how this war will come out. Meanwhile, in Mitten Baruch Haba comes along a strange nation that wants to make peace with him. So it's like how focused could he have been on this? And if you look in the chapter, you'll notice that a lot of the talk isn't directly with Yeshua. It's with the other Jewish people. Even right in the beginning, in Pasuk in Pasuk Vav it says, Vayom Re'lov ve'el Ish Yisrael. They spoke to him and to the Ish Yisrael, to the Jewish people. So it didn't seem that they got all their attention with Yeshua either. And Yeshua probably, you know, can imagine, you know, like, I know, and I'm really, really busy, okay? And then somebody outside the shul calls for something. You know, I'd like to give them more time, but, you know, I just can't. So, you know, and I can't be as focused and as sharp as if, you know, someone from the community is calling or the things I'm working on right now. These people calling you, would you like to, you know, volunteer and give a lecture? I don't have no time to see my kids, let alone give you a lecture. You know, and you don't give it sometimes the thought you would want to give it. Maybe something I should do, but I still got the time to think it through. So, and then you find out later, you know, if you would have spoken to them, you would have had connections with this one, or that place, whatever. Right? But, you know, I didn't have the time to think it through. So Yeshua is really very, you know, as sound-minded as he was, clearly he was. But at the end of the day, you know, he didn't have a lot of time to deal with these people. He couldn't have time to think it through. You know, let me think on the issue for a couple days and I'll get back to you. I mean, you know, I got a major war to fight and I got to concentrate on that. So it's where you need a little bit of siyata deshmaya, where, you know, a little voice could come in your mind and say, why don't you ask Hashem? No, it's saying a fact. It's saying a fact. Val espi Hashem lo shalu.
According to this, it's not a criticism.
I didn't say it's not a criticism. I didn't say it's not a criticism.
No, you're saying maybe Hashem put it in there, blocked it.
No, in other words, you know, he still could have, you know, maybe thought of the idea. But he didn't. Right? You know, sometimes, you know, it could be he should have thought it out of his own, but Hashem could have helped him and put the idea in his mind. Clearly Hashem didn't. and it wouldn't be a big deal for Hashem to do it. Now, it's not like Yeshua is a guy choosing between good and evil over here. You know, should I give up my Yiddishkeit? Should I not give up Yiddishkeit? It's a question of judgment. It's a question of leadership, right? It's not a question, for example, of Shaul not listening to Shmuel when he was told to kill every Amaleki, and it had a clear directive, and he just didn't listen to a clear directive. That's a clear violation. Okay, Yeshua knows, okay, he's supposed to kill out the seven nations. The other ones he can spare. Okay, so it's a question now, not of a free will choice of listening to Hashem. Of course he wants to listen to Hashem. So he wasn't as careful in interrogating them. How much of a crime could that be? So I didn't do such a good job. I asked him a few questions. It seemed okay to me. They looked like they were from far away. I kept pressing them. He didn't let one question go. He asked them a number of questions. And he said, you know, to my mind, it looks like, so what, I gotta bother Hashem? You know, I'm gonna have to call him up anyway tomorrow to see if we should go to battle against all these countries. Think, how much can you nudge Hashem already? How are you gonna nudge Hashem? I'm gonna call the Kohen with the Urim and Thummim anyway. Any minute. Should we fight? Should we not fight? So I'm gonna bother him with this Kleinigkeit. With this little thing. It's a little two-bit country from who knows how far away. So this wasn't a for sure, could never be misconstrued as a mistake, as a sin. Because he was trying to do the right. He said, okay, I've decided they're from far away, and therefore this and this is the law. Finished. But what I think the Navi is saying is that, would say, but they didn't ask Hashem. So they didn't ask Hashem, meaning to say, Hashem put it that he should make this error in judgment. It's an error in judgment and an error in Avodas Hashem. This was not an error in Avodas Hashem. It was an error in judgment. He didn't negotiate properly, whatever. He didn't know how scheming they were and schemed back as much. But the word is, but that too is part of Hashem's plan. For everything to work out the way Hashem wanted it to work out, something had to happen. If they would just go in and knock off the first country and knock off the second country, what would have happened, right? Not the result, and knock off one country after the next, then the promise of Hashem would not have come true. So Hashem has to arrange things in a way that Achan sins, and that the Jewish people make a mistake, and they talk, weren't as sharp as they should be to identify any potential sinners amongst them. And when they lose the war, and the other nations then believe maybe if we use a lot of force, we'll be able to defeat them. And when they did this trickery, then the Givonim came up with their trickery. All these things came out of Achan's mistake. How could it be such a terrible thing? You know what? Hashem knows I got a plan, and I know I got a Shmo called Achan who I'm going to use to my benefit. I will use him to my benefit. He's using his free will choice already to be a bad guy. I could have had him found out before. You don't think he couldn't have had him found out in the days? So you're wondering, how did he let him go by so far with Moshe, right? Achan was four-time sinner, right? Way back, in the good old days, with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? How can it go? And Hashem lets it go. So give all kinds of technical reasons. We're not responsible one for another. What are you talking about? Get the guy out of the picture. He's a schmo. Hashem said, no, I can't. You know why? Because I need to use him. I need him. Because down the line, there's going to be a loss. There has to be a loss. There has to be a setback. Without a setback, the psychology is not going to work properly. Right? So then Hashem said, I need one more setback. I need the Givonim to be a pain in the neck.
Why did we have to lose that tzaddik at
that time? Why do you have to lose a tzaddik? That's a Kaddish Baruch Hu's cheshbon. That's a Kaddish Baruch Hu's cheshbon. You know, why that tzaddik? There's all kinds of calculations. I can't, we can't figure out all the calculations. You know, I mean, to a certain degree, there was a certain responsibility. We said that tzaddikim are responsible to make sure the spiritual welfare is as high as it should be. But when you're looking in the global perspective, you know, to make the conquest as perfect and complete as possible, you know, these were the things that have to be set into place for this to happen. So there, and therefore, you know, when you make a certain mistake, what the lesson is, when you make a certain mistake in life, you know, don't beat yourself up so much over it. Because this too is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. He wanted you to make a mistake. Sometimes he wants you to make a mistake. Okay, you learn from the mistake. You try not to make the mistake again. But sometimes, I'm not talking about, you know, but even in anything, in any concepts, there's always the idea, at the end of the day, Hashem wanted you to do this aveira. From His perspective, not from your perspective. Even if you do a gross aveira, this too was the Ratzon Hashem, after the fact. You still get punished, and you still have to do tshuva, and there's no question about it. At the end of the day, there was a learning experience meant to happen, and you'll grow from this experience, and you'll be better from this experience. And for your tikkun, maybe this was the best way for it to work. And only Judaism can handle such a thing. When you did the avera, you take full responsibility for it, and it's your fault, and you get punished, and this and that, and everything else. But then you go on. You go on and stop beating yourself up over it. And you say, okay, I'm going to try not to do that avera again. But there was a reason for me to do this avera. There's something to be gained in the long run from this. And life will continue and be better through my error. Because at the end of the day, Hashem, couldn't He have always given you a little more strength and not done the avera? He could have. You could have had more siyata d'shmaya. And He didn't give you siyata d'shmaya. So there's a reason why He didn't give you the siyata d'shmaya. There's a reason. You may not know the reason. So, you make a boneheaded mistake. This is also the Ratzon Hashem. A boneheaded mistake is also the Ratzon Hashem. In a certain, it's not to be used as an excuse that it wasn't my fault. It's not to be used as an excuse, not my fault. But Hashem wanted me to make this mistake too. Wanted me to make this mistake. Because if He didn't, He would have helped me. I'm responsible for it. I can't shirk responsibility. But the problem is we beat ourselves up over these things. And then we don't feel we can go on, and we're not worth anything, etc., etc. So you see that Yeshua, how could He make such a boneheaded mistake? Really, it's a boneheaded mistake. You're the leader. You got Hashem to ask. Ask. What's it going to cost you? Who wouldn't have done this? Right? And you think the princes were so clever to make an oath? What are you making an oath for? Who asked you to make an oath? They probably were so excited. Ooh, somebody wants to make a covenant with us. Whoa, it's amazing. We're so happy. We're going to show them we're really into it. What are you idiots? What are you doing that for? But you know what? Hashem put it in their mind. No. So what do you learn from this? As boneheaded as the Israeli leadership is today, it's also the Ratzon Hashem. It's also the Ratzon Hashem. It's a bunch of morons running the government.
No, Why
do we criticize them? No, because you still have an obligation to criticize. You have an obligation to criticize, but you have an obligation. I understand, but you have to do what you have to do. There is a Torah that says if injustice happens, you can't sit idly by and be quiet. You have to at least make a protest. And your protest may not succeed, but that's so you don't become as terrible as they are. Say, so, yeah, they're right, let them do it. Who are we to question? Who are we to argue? What are you talking about? They're doing the wrong thing. They have disregard for human life. You have to speak out against it. But at the end of the day, that's what Hashem wants happening. Now, He wants you to fight against them, but He probably, the way things are going, we ain't gonna win this one. And that could also be the Ratzon Hashem. How this all will fit into play, let's just be a little patient, let God play out the scene. Maybe He's trying to highlight so much the bankruptcy of modern Zionism till every single Jew will see how bankrupt it is. And then they'll pack a turn to Hashem. We don't know. We can't predict the next scene, the next act. But one thing's for sure, God is not helping them. There's a time when God did help them, and there's a time God's not helping them. And God is, remember, the bottom line is Mashiach has to come. And we don't have a lot of time till it's supposed to come. So Hashem has to make certain unusual things happen. Like, how could it be so boneheaded to even attempt? Everybody's giving their suggestions. You know, that's why, it doesn't pay to talk too much about it. You know, the politics, and we don't have any more leaders. It's all narishkeit. Don't waste your time talking about it. If we only had Feiglin, if we only had this guy, it's all a mirage and an illusion, and Hashem is just putting the puppets around in the place He wants to make it. We want to do learn Torah and daven to Hashem. Try to save as many Yidden as we can. That's all. And help whatever Yidden and Eretz Yisrael need to be helped. And that's it. Leave the politics up to God. Leave the wars up to God. And that's all. He'll take care of it. He'll take care of it. So that's why we have to look at it the same way.
You shouldn't take any action one way or the other.
You know what? You know, the truth is there is no action to do. There is no action to do. You criticize them, and we had all kinds of rallies and this and that. The Israel government goes, CDO, I couldn't care less about you. Couldn't care less about you. And you're talking to the wall. Couldn't care less about you. And that's it. Okay, you'll make another protest. We didn't send a protest letter to the government. We sent, they couldn't care less. They couldn't care less. Yeah, that's right. You vote in Sharon a right winger and he becomes a left winger. So you see how foolish you are? You see how foolish you are? Hashem is trying to show everybody these politicians aren't worth anything. Will you stop putting your hopes on them? And maybe one day you'll think of putting your hopes on Hashem. So when, chas v'shalom, the Arabs will get the upper hand and they'll start killing Yidden, really, and they'll all be ready to destroy us, then maybe all the Yidden will daven to Hashem. And every secular Jew will daven to Hashem. He says, that's what I was waiting for. Couldn't you do it on your own? I had to do all this work till you'd come to believe in me. I went and gave you miracles in 48 and 56 and 67. I figured I'll do it with sweetness and kindness and love and give you a hug. Maybe you'll talk to me. You're still not talking to me. Can't go on. It's not just, okay, now we're going to have to do it the other way. We have to do it the other way. And I have to construct it in a way it's going to be so bad, or potentially, let's hope it's only potentially so bad, that you maybe then will turn to me. So you can't fight this. You can't fight this. You have to just keep your head on your shoulder, and you have to speak out where it's appropriate to speak out. But you know, making big whole campaigns against, they couldn't care less about your campaigns. Don't waste your energy on trying to change their minds. That's what I'm trying to say. You will not change their mind. So what should you do? Keep focused. What are you supposed to do? Save every yid you can, because Mashiach's coming pretty soon. Keep your energies focused in the right direction. That's what we got to do, and don't get caught up in the politics. So that's what's happening over here. So they make the covenant, and it was a bad covenant. At the end of the day, after all the terutzim, the end is it's the Yad Hashem and finished. That's it. Hashem is not helping Yeshua; he didn't help him. And things will still, believe it or not, they still worked out pretty good. It still worked out pretty good. All right, now where are we inside over here? Uba Emes, about six lines from the top on 119. Uba Emes Achrei Ki Nodolem Ki Krovim Heim, and the truth is when they knew that they were close. Uba Kirbo Heim Yoshvim, and they live amongst them. Hanachon Maod, what would have been the proper thing to do? Shalola Kablam, not to accept them. Af Im Yirtzu Shuv Ba'ifin Hasayinam, and even if they would want to take all the conditions of the seven nations to have peace. I mean, now that they lied to them, right? So, and they made up the covenant without any conditions. The truth is, now that they found out the truth, even if the Givonim would say, okay, we'll do everything we're supposed to do as a resident of the country, they shouldn't accept to them. Why? Ki kvar heru daitim shalo ratzu lios bibris kemo zayinamim. Because they already showed that they don't want to be like the seven nations by tricking them. You already showed your true colors, didn't you? You could have come and you could have said, we want to make peace straight up and up. We're from here, we want to make peace, willing all these things. But they didn't want that. So they showed they didn't want it. So now they caught you. And now our people are coming after you to kill you. And it goes, okay, we're going to do everything you want. We know it's not a sincere request. Vasutarmi Saramas Yeshua, they did all kinds of tricks to fool them to begin with. Yisrael, Lashakar, Bavil, Sadavil, Goli. You lied with something, you knew we would catch you anyway. I mean, it's really brazen. They knew they were going to get caught within a couple days, which they were. So they really deserve to really get it over the head and to get killed. You bunch of liars and no good for nicks. But they didn't hit them. Because the Nisiyim made that oath. This was all with the Givonim, though. That's the only one they made the oath with. But the other seven nations, Hashem didn't put it in their heart to send and their own initiatives of peace to Yeshua. To really hear what happened. With the other seven nations, they were just going with the hearsay on the street, which Hashem also put into their hearts, to only listen to the hearsay. And not to really say, what's going on? Why was there not a covenant? I mean, Jews, they did know there was a history of honesty with Jews. So like to hear the other side. No, why do you want to hear the other side? they can't be right. They only interpreted the way the Givonim said it to them. I'm sure they sent an ambassador to the Givonim. Hey, can you tell us what's going on, guys? Oh, the Jews, really? What do you think they're going to say? Oh, we got caught in our tricks? What do you think the Givonim are going to respond to the other kings? Well, you know, we tried to trick them and they caught us, and really they should have killed us and they didn't. Do you think that's what they're going to say? Yeah, you think when one Arab leader talks to another, they're not going to give them the truth, right? So when they heard what they heard, so hiskimu, they said, oh, ki ein mamash b'chlu v'esham. I guess those peace treaties are nothing, because look how they treated the Givonim. They make them wood choppers, water carriers. That's such a low, that's worse than just being servants. Im kein ein etza lahem rak l'chazik m'chol. So there's no solution, we got to go to war. So this was all so that they would all go to war. So the peace treaty kind of failed. It was a failed peace treaty. So you got to look at all the failed peace treaties that are happening now. It's God's way of bringing the next wonderful step. Now, but at this point, right now, at this very point, before we go on to the next parak, you can see Yeshua and the Nisim, if they would be doing polls of popularity, they would be down in the polls. They'll be down in the polls. What's going on over here? It's like, Mom, Michelle, well, we had Yericho, they crossed the Yarden. Yericho, Yeshua's popularity is 98%. You know, lose the battle of Ai, whoo, goes down to 50%, right? Okay, counting victory, this and that, okay, back up to 75%. And then, what a diplomatic faux pas. What's going on with the Givonim? And now they're going to live with us. We don't have a choice. What's going on? Yeah, and he's backtracking. He said, "Oh, it's down to 40%." You know, she said, "What's going on? I'm trying my best. It's not working." Can you imagine how Yeshua's probably beating himself up over here? He said, "What's going on over here?" And now, on top of this, I got all these nations going to ready to attack me. Popularity goes down to 20%. He says, "Listen, we were hoping to take it one at a time. Now look what you did, Yeshua." With all your mistakes, they're all ready to attack us in one shot. Right? This is all the low point before the fantastic scene 5. Now, this is all setting you up. Because now you're ready. You're ready to appreciate Perek Yud. And now you're going to see things that never before happened. Hashem was setting it all up. He put the scenes all in place. And now in the next two chapters, everything's going to come together. And only in retrospect will people be able to understand this was all what Hashem wanted to have happen. Right? So that's as we will see as we now we'll start the next paragraph. It begins chapter Yud. So we're going to be flipping back and forth a little bit now between the booklet and the Sefer Perek Yud. You're going to see very quickly what's going on now. But what did we say? Remember, it's said on the page before when we started it, the Treaty of the Givonim caused two things to happen, right? One is that the kingdoms go against them, and the second one is that the others wouldn't do peace. So he explained why the others wouldn't do peace. Now let's explain why the others are now attacking how they are. Vapula Shnia, all right, you know, the next section over there. Asa Samasa Givonim Shepolish and Isasu Harbi Melachim Yachal Melachim Yeshua. This action of the Givonim also caused that not, you know, one king attacking Yeshua at a time or two, but to have five. It was like a major war. Five is always like a big number. Remember with Avram, the five kings and the four kings? I mean, it's a major force. Givonim. Now what happened out of all this? Givonim hipilu pachad al Yisrael ha'amim shoheis givon ir gedolah. Because the peace treaty that they made caused a great fear. Because Givon was a mighty power. It wasn't a little eye. It was a mighty power, the central region of Israel. Five cities made up, we'll call the Givon Council. The Givon itself was an allied troop, or an Axis troop. It wasn't, I was like one city, Givon was five cities together. Right? And everybody saw that they were afraid. And they made a peace treaty with Yisrael. Must be, Bavade b'nei Yisrael, Gibori Muhammad. The Jews must be very, very strong. Right? And let's just now, with your finger here, put your finger in the sefer. And let's read a little bit. Vayhiki Shmoa Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim Kilochad Yeshua Sa'ai. And it was when Adoni Tzedek. Adoni Tzedek is the name given for the king of Yerushalayim. That's the kingly name, not his real name, but it's like Paro and Caesar. And he heard, Ki lokad Yisrael asai, that Yeshua conquered Ai. Vayacharimo, and destroyed it. Kasher asal Yericho lamalko, like he did to Yericho and to its king. And he repeats it now. So he did to I and to the king. It's interesting, this double expression over here. He's explaining, you know, why they're deciding to go together over here. Because they heard his trickery in war and figured, you know what, we're going to have to, going to come up with a lot of force. But they also heard the second thing. The other thing that they heard as well, not just what they did to Ai, but the kind of brutal destruction that happened. Just like he did to Yericho, so he did to Ai. I mean to say that if he only would have destroyed the city, that's normal in conquest. But after he destroys the city of Ai, right? After he destroyed Yericho, rather, so and he put it to rubble, he says, that's not unusual. When a conquering country comes, they'll knock the first city to rubble just to show everybody what they can do. But they're not going to do it every city. You know, it's no need to do that. But when they saw that Ai got the same treatment as Yericho, it got totally destroyed, totally. Right? So it looks like they're really here just to mamish level this whole country. To mamish level this whole country. Right? And that's what he's saying. And then they hear, And obviously, they're also here, they spell out, you know, what he did to the king, too. They hung the kings. So they say, you know what? They're here for blood. We're not going to have any kind of solutions. And remember, who makes the decisions? The king. And the king saw that, you know what? It looks like what's going to be the end of this, if we don't do something drastic, is our heads are going to be swinging from a noose. So the kings had a lot to lose. So that was also something that played on their mind very greatly. What also played on their mind, that they made a peace treaty with the people of Givon, which certainly made them be afraid. Because if Givon was afraid, and they were the most powerful, so then what about us? And also, and they now will be in our midst. Right? And meaning to say, who's in our midst? The Givonim will be in our midst. Now that the Jews accepted them, many made peace treaty with them, right? So the fact that they're with us now, you'll see in a minute what's going to happen from this. You're going to see in a second what's going to happen with this. Vayirum o pasuk beis, and they were very much afraid. Ki ir gedol givon ke achas orem amlocha. The Givon was a big, big country, like one of the big countries that ruled. It was much bigger than I, quantitatively, and also were big soldiers, and qualitatively, it was like a top-notch raid country. So obviously this puts a tremendous, tremendous fear. Pasuk Gimel, Vayishlach Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim El Hoham Melech Hebron. I guess that's where they came from. The name of the king of Hebron was Hoham. Vel Piram Melech Yarmus. Vel Yofia Melech Lochish, Vel Devir Melech Eglon Lemor. So he calls to another four kings. These are all in the region. I don't remember if we gave out that the little map, right? We had a little map over there. This one, right? Is it this one? Yeah. Remember this map over here? Right? So just take a look. So take a look who we're dealing with over here. You have right next door. You got Hebron, Devir, Eglon, all these guys. This becomes the next, this is the major enclave. This is the major southern enclave. I mean, together with them and Givon, this represented a lot of people. So now he takes this whole group together and he calls to them. And Pasuk Dal, so what's his thoughts? This Alu Eli, come up with me. Vizrunin, help me. Because who's the next one on the list? Figure, now look carefully. Where's Yerushalayim? Right here. They've attacked Ai. They've made peace with Givon. Where's next to go? Well, the next place to go is Yerushalayim. That's the next place. So this king can feel the heat. Can feel the heat, so he's going to call to his compatriots below, I'm going to need your help. I'm going to need your help. I don't know. I mean, everybody knew Yerushalayim was special in a certain way. Everyone knew Yerushalayim was special. Maybe not as special as we understood it, but everybody knew it was special. And he says, and let's hit Givon. Vinakis Givon, why? Ki hishlima Yeshua, because they made peace with Yeshua. Vespinesh on with the Jewish people. And that's the concern over here. Is obviously the concern is if the Jews go to war with us, who's gonna help them? The Givonim. So now they're not the Jews themselves seem like a pretty formidable bunch, and now you're gonna have the Givonim, which in other words, an alliance has been struck. In other words, the Givonim, they probably told her, they said, why'd you make a peace here? Well, you know, what do you want? You know, they're terrible in negotiating. They outsmarted us, the Jews. The Givonim, we're gonna say. They're not gonna say they tricked them. They said they outsmarted us, this and that, we were afraid, whatever we're gonna say. You know, we thought we were gonna get a peaceful treaty, and they cheated us. And now we're stuck. So they figure, you know what? When push comes to shove, the Givonim are going to take the side of the Jews. So now they're going to have to really master armies in an incredible way. Right? So that's what's going on over here. So that's what happens. Pasuk Hey. So who are they going to attack? They're going to attack the Givonim. You know what this sounds like? You know, after Egypt made a peace treaty with Israel in 1976, I believe. It was Camp David. Right? How did the rest of the Arab world react to them? Very simple. Sadat got assassinated. Plain and simple. You know, there's no question why Sadat got assassinated. And you dare make a peace treaty with the Jews? So Egypt was sort of marginalized for a while. Because of that, how could you break our Arab alliance over here? So okay, you know, for Egypt's good interest, that they made sure that the peace was never such a great peace. I mean, they've never really attacked the Jews, but there's all been just a million violations. So they've become, you know, reaccepted by the Arab world. But in those days, you didn't wait very long. There wasn't a lot of time to wait. So you go and make a peace with the Jews. We'll teach you a lesson. Let's just go attack Givon. In other words, make it a lesson that nobody will think to make a peace treaty. Right? So he says, come on, you help me, we gotta attack Givon first. And now at least nobody else is going to make peace treaties with the Yidden. Because if more people make peace treaties, they're really gonna be in trouble. So that's what happens. So all five countries get together and they go up towards Givon. Vayachanu al Givon, they camped by Givon, vayilochamu aleho, and they were prepared to do battle with them. So comes tremendous chutzpah of Givon, pasukvav. So how does Givon react? Vayishluchu anshei Givon al Yeshua el amachane ha-Gilgal aleimor. The people of Givon send a message to Yeshua and to his camp in Gilgal, saying, al teref yadechem evadecha. Don't loosen your hand over your servants. Remember, we made a peace treaty. Aleinu, come up to us, Mehera, quickly. Voshialanu, and help us. Vazreinu, really save us. Vazreinu, and help us. Two expressions over here. Difference between Hoshia and Azer. Hoshia is to totally save, do everything. They say, come on, Voshia, and save us, fight the whole war, or at least, Vazrein, at least help a little bit. Because all the kingdoms of Amori, who sit in the mountain, they've come to attack us. So you gotta wonder, how do you think Yeshua's popularity is now? Can you imagine if Egypt got attacked by the Arabs and said to Israel, will you help us out? You know, it says, now look what you got us into. Now we gotta go fight to save the Givonim. Right? So Yeshua didn't have a choice. He did make a covenant. What did the covenant say? I will help you live. So it seems he has to go. Alright, so we'll continue tomorrow at that point at Pasuk Zion.